So last week we started this new text, Hymn to Sri Dakshinamurti, or it is a hymn to Dakshinamurti, as we studied last time, is the Lord Himself. And in this text, the Lord of the universe Himself appears as a teacher, and His teachings were put in this text of 10 verses by Adi Shankaracharya, a great master of these in the 8th century AD in India. And so, just to summarize what we had studied in the first verse, which are on page 8, the meditation verses, we have not gone to the main text yet. We did the first verse last time, and what this describes is there were these four students who had studied the scriptures but did not have the highest knowledge, the experience. Like you may have studied something, you may have studied medicine or engineering, but until you see a patient or until you see a project and how you perform, so they did not have the final experience on this. They went in search of a teacher, and they found this teacher who was a young person. The Lord Himself appeared in front of them to give them this highest knowledge of who they are and what is this world and what is my relationship. And the reason we have chosen this text, because every verse is a meditative verse. You can apply that in your meditation, even though this is a class of meditation. But every verse is very useful in meditation. So in the first verse, we found the teacher sitting in the middle and the students surrounding him. And the students are old because they have studied so much, but they don't have the final experience. And the Lord, of course, we know is always young, always youthful. And so He gives the knowledge to them, but in silence. Not speaking, but gave the knowledge in silence. How He did that, we shall talk a little more today also. But their questions were in silence, and the answers were also in silence. And it is described that the Lord of the universe is always joyful, always cheerful. So here the Lord and the teacher are one. Sometimes we find there is a Lord and then there is a teacher and then there is the student. But here the God and teacher are both one, and the students represent us who are also trying to study this knowledge. So this text will help us to study that. So we'll go to the verse number 2. Vata vita pisamipe bhumi bhage nishannam sakala muni jananam jnana dataramarat tribhuvan gurumisham dakshinamurti devam janan maran dukkha chedada daksham namami. So the last word is namami. That means I prostrate, I bow down, I humbly salute. Whom do I salute? My teacher, who is God Himself. And that is a very important requirement for a student. For a student to learn anything, he or she has to have the humility. When you approach a teacher thinking that I already know it and what is the teacher can teach me, or you go to test the teacher and see if the teacher really knows, when you ask a question, then your attitude is of arrogance. So the attitude should be humble. And knowledge can, like water, can only flow from higher level to a lower level. So knowledge can only flow from higher to a lower when the student is receptive. Also, the student is shown as sitting underneath the four students, which means that the knowledge flows from higher to the lower level, signifying the humility of the four students. So I prostrate to that teacher, I bow down to the teacher. Where is the teacher? Vata vita pi samipe bhumi bhage nishannam. Vata vita, the banyan tree. Underneath the banyan tree, bhumi bhage, on the ground, the Lord is sitting. And the students are also sitting on the ground. The Lord, of course, the teacher is at a higher level. Sakala muni jananam. To all these munis, these are actually renunciates, these are monks. These are monks who had studied a lot from their teacher, but had come to the Lord asking for the final experience. Jnana datara marat, and the teacher gave this knowledge to the students. See, when a student approaches a teacher with the right attitude and with the right type of question, the teacher has no choice. The teacher has to teach because it is the teacher's duty. I mean, you may say, well, the teacher is, you know, doing a favor to the student. It's not so. The teacher is part of the teacher's duty, somebody who has the knowledge. And if somebody else approaches with humility, then the knowledge has to be given. That is one of the requirements. So here, of course, the Lord of the universe is the source of all the knowledge, whatever knowledge we have, whether it's knowledge of physics or chemistry or biology or cooking or gardening or whatever we know, everything comes from him. So here, this knowledge was given by the teacher to the students, who were contemplative students. Muni means mananshilvan. So they were contemplative students. They were not just idle students who just showed up. Let's see if, you know, if I learn something, fine. If not, it's okay. You know, I'll just go home and sleep. No, they were contemplative. The idea was that whatever knowledge I have obtained from the teacher, I have to go home and think about it. I have to contemplate upon it, and then I have to apply it in my life. And it's the same thing when you go to college or you study anything. You then go home and think about it, and then you apply that in the test, and then you apply that in your real life when you're faced with the situation. Then the third line says, Tribhuvan Gurum Isham. Isham means Ishwara, the Lord. He is the Lord of Tribhuvan, of the three worlds. Gurum means he is the teacher and he is the Lord. And that is true. The Lord of the universe is the Lord of everything. He is not only the Lord of the earth, not only of the humans, but he is also God of all the animals, plants, birds, fish. Everything are created by him, supported by him. Even up in the heavens, you know, where there are angels and different gods and, you know, goddesses and all those upper worlds of different levels of heavens, they are supported by him. Even the lower world, what we call as hell or the patal or the lower realms where the ghosts and the demons and the goblins and they live, that those worlds are also supported by the Lord. So they say this Lord of the universe is the Lord of all three worlds, the heavens, the earth, the whole universe that we can see, and also the lower worlds. When they talk about three worlds, one meaning, of course, is the outer world. Another meaning is the inner world. Because in our life, we go through three worlds, waking, dream, and deep sleep. So there are three, like one, now I am in the waking, hopefully all of us are in the waking, maybe one or two are asleep already, but if you are not, then all of you are in the waking world, and then after some time we'll go out to our house after dinner or whatever and then go to sleep, and then before you wake up in the morning you may have a dream, and then after your dream then you wake up. So whether you're in the waking world, which is this world, in the deep sleep, of course, you are in the world of ignorance. And then in the dream world, we create our own world. In the dream, I may be in the forest in Africa, and tiger is after me, and I'm up in the tree. So I created this whole world. So in all the three worlds, there is one constant. And who is that? That is Om. That is the Lord. That is the consciousness. So the consciousness within me supports all the three worlds, whether I am awake, whether I am dreaming, or whether I am in deep sleep. It is the Lord, the consciousness, the life principle that is sustaining everything. So that's why it is said he is the Lord of all the three worlds. So within me there are three worlds, and then outside me there are three worlds. So he is the Lord of all the three worlds. And he is also the Guru, which means that whatever I learn in my waking state, in this world here, or whatever I learn outside, every knowledge I have, I get it from him. Even my ability to know, my ability to learn, my intellect, my mind, my body, my sense organs, everything are his gift. So he is the Lord of all the knowledges. And it says, Dakshinamurti Devam, and he is called Dakshinamurti. The Lord We had talked about that last time, because Dakshina means south, which means in our scriptures, it means the realm of death. So the north being the north does not mean that north as in direction, but north represents the higher. So that is where the teacher is said to reside in the north, and the students, we reside in the south, because we are in the realm of death, in the realm of change. So the teacher who has faced death and realized that he or she is immortal is said to face death, said to face the south. So that's why he's called Dakshinamurti, means the Lord of the universe is beyond death and he is ever living. Then it says, Janana Marana Dukha Cheda Daksham Namami. Namami, I prostrate to the teacher. And this, all these verses describe the qualities of the teacher and the Lord, and what is the knowledge that I have obtained from this Lord. These are all introductory verses. They still have not got to the text. So Janana Marana Dukha. Janana means birth, Marana means death, and Dukha means the sorrow. You say, well, death we understand as sorrow, but why birth is sorrow? He says, Janana Marana Dukha. Birth is also sorrow and death is also sorrow. Death, okay, you say, okay, you know, I'm going to leave my near and dear ones. I'm going to be in pain. I'm going to be sick. But why do they say that the birth is also a death? Well, think about it. A child, the first thing he or she does when is born from the mother's womb is start crying. Why? Oh, I was so comfortable in my mother's womb. I was, all my food and needs, everything was taken care of. And then suddenly he gets pushed out and now he has to go out and fend for himself. And also, I think the reason they say the world is sorrow is not only birth is sorrow, but even living is to some extent sorrow. The only joy comes when you permanently realize the highest truth. Until then, as long as you are living in this world, you are, and we are, constantly in search of happiness. So what we do, first we start with physical happiness. I have to have my physical comforts. I have to have my house and my car and my job and my money and my bank balance and my retirement and my provident fund, all that, 401k, all the investments. While you're fulfilling, then suddenly, you know, I need emotional satisfaction. I know people don't love me. I want somebody to love, somebody whom I can marry, and then somebody whom I can, you know, call my own, and then I should have children. And then all the problems start, you know, husband and wife and children and teenagers and, you know, so all those problems start. and then the mental, and then again intellectual, you know, I have to be successful. I have to be the number one. I have to do good in my studies, in the business, you know, it's a cutthroat competition in the company. You know, everybody wants the managing director's position and people are trying to cut each other, or, you know, other competitions, you know, Republican and Democrat, liberal and conservative, and then somebody is successful and somebody is unsuccessful. So constantly we are in a struggle, wanting more and more at the physical level, more and more at the mental level, more and more at the intellectual level. And there is no end to this wanting. So no matter how much people have, until they have that contentment, they are all the time struggling, striving, wanting. So you get one thing satisfied and then something else is not satisfied. You get this one satisfied and this one is not. And in the meantime, your physical problem, you know, some arthritis comes, or some, you know, joint problems, or some headaches, or, you know, back problem, some illness, some fever. So what they say is that life is a constant series of struggles. And the struggles continue until you realize that you are that infinite self. You are that infinite consciousness who at this moment has taken on this body. And a person who realizes that, a person who experiences that, then becomes a saint, becomes a prophet, becomes a teacher. And that is why we read the Bible and the Quran and the Bhagavad Gita and this Dakshinamurti, these texts, to give us the knowledge, because this knowledge was given to us by the great masters who had experienced that highest truth. And one who experiences that truth, it's not that the person stops trying. He's not going to say, okay, I'm going to give up my house or give up my friends or give up my position and power. But then he or she becomes immune. If there is a comfort, it is fine. If it's not there, I'm still fine. So he or she no longer depends on worldly objects, emotions, and thoughts to provide his life, to make it complete. Because he has experienced that completeness within. And this saint, he or she who experiences that truth, then becomes independent of the world. He or she can then live their life and function. In fact, they work more efficiently than you and me. Because we are still at the level of acquiring, possessing, wanting, fighting, competing, jealousy, hatred, greed. But when you have gotten beyond that, and such a person becomes a prophet, becomes a great master, and that is the goal of. So, he says the Lord of the universe can destroy these sorrows of the birth and death by giving us the highest knowledge. And it is said the Lord is said to be Daksham. Daksham is a very beautiful word, which means he is very efficient. And think about it, he is so efficient. Look at it. Look at how the whole universe is so beautifully positioned. You know, all the stars are in their place, the planets are in their place, and the planets exactly circle the earth 365 days. You know, the earth goes around the sun, and then, you know, in 24 hours it rotates. And day and night are beautifully positioned. All the plants, the animals, the birds, the fish are also beautifully maintained. And it's not only this one world, but there are so many other worlds, you know, so many other species of bacteria, fungi, viruses. They're all taken care of by the Lord of the universe. And this is only one earth we know. I'm sure there are millions of such earths and millions of such, you know, planets and stars. And we don't know what kind of worlds there may be and how beautifully everything is maintained. If nothing else, you think about the Halley's Comet. You know, it always amazes me that every 86 years, the Halley's Comet comes by, takes off, and at, I don't know what, 30,000 or 60,000 miles per hour or something, 60,000. It keeps on traveling. For 86 years, it goes through the outermost realms of space, turns around, and precisely 86 years later comes back and then takes off. Who's controlling all that? It's so amazing. You know, that amazes me that every 86 years, how does it go? And how does it know that it has to come back to the same place? It's so wondrous, this beautiful universe. It's just mind-boggling. So he says, that beautiful, efficient Lord, who is also my teacher, that is the beauty of this text, that the Lord himself is teaching us. That's why there is a lot to be studied from this text. And as we go into it, you will realize that how powerful this book is. So that is the verse number second. I prostrate to that Lord. Now we'll go to the verse number third, which also is very nice. Chitram vatataror mule vriddha shishya gurur yuva Gurostu maunam vyakhyanam shishyastu chinna samshayaha. Okay, chitram. Chitram has two meanings. One is, it's on page 9, the verse number 3. Chitram means vichitram. Means it is a wonder. It is a wondrous thing. Or chitram also means picture. So it says picturize it, visualize it. Visualize in your mind, or here we don't need to visualize. We have the picture right here. You know, but if you don't have this picture, then you can say you visualize in your mind. What do you visualize? Vata taror mule. Vata taror. Under the vata tree, under the banyan tree, mule means at the root. So at the root of the banyan tree, vriddha shishya gurur yuva. The students are vriddha, the students are old, and the teacher is young. As we had talked last time also, the students, majority of the time, you know, the teacher is more experienced, is said to be wise and older, And the students are young, you know, like in college, you know, when you approach the teacher is generally older and the student is young. But here, it has been shown that the students, they had studied a lot, but they didn't have the highest knowledge. And the Lord is said to be young because the Lord is ever youthful. In our scriptures, he is described as ever youthful because he is always creating new things, full of energy, vitality. So it is said God never gets old. And that's why it's signified here that the student is young and the teacher is young and the students are old. That's why they say it is vichitra. It is a wonder. It is strange. It is a very strange scene. He says, visualize this strange scene that you are under a tree and the teacher is the Lord himself and the students are sitting around him. And guroho means the teacher indeed, maunam vyakhyanam. Maunam means silent, vyakhyanam means he taught. He taught in silence. And shishya tu chimna samshayaha. Shishya and the students, chinna samshaya. Chinna means destroyed, samshaya means all their doubts of the students were destroyed, were dispelled. So, how can the teacher teach in silence and how can the doubts be dispelled? I go and sit in front of somebody and I ask a question and the person stays silent. And you say, what? He didn't say anything. I wasted my time. Like here, if you came here and I for half an hour, I said, I'll just sit silent. You'll say, well, I'm not coming from next Thursday. But it's very interesting. This what we are speaking is indicating the truth. The highest knowledge cannot be expressed in words. It has to be taught in silence. There's a very beautiful story. It is said Buddha once sitting under a tree. And as we know, the Buddha had realized the truth. And so these four students approached him. And so together they had one doubt. So they asked Buddha, is there God? So the Buddha stayed silent. He didn't say anything. They waited for a while. Is there God? He was silent. He was looking at them with a very peaceful, silent expression. So they said, what is wrong with this person? They thought to themselves. One said, the Buddha is not speaking. That means there is no God. So my question is answered. He took off. The second one says, he's not answering. That means he doesn't know it. So it's no use staying here. So he took off too. The third one says, he knows, but for some reason he is being stubborn. He's not answering. Why should I waste my time in front of such a teacher? So he took off also. But the fourth one, whose mind was quiet, whose mind was peaceful, he realized that this teacher is somebody special, somebody very high. And so he sat there and in the silence, he tuned his mind with the teacher's mind. And then he understood that certain things cannot be put in words. And so it is said that this particular student spent years with the Buddha. And how did he learn? By tuning his mind to the teacher's mind. It's like a radio. You cannot see the radio waves, but when you tune your radio to 95.3 and when it is being broadcast from the radio station, you can get the sound. So the student has to tune his mind to the teacher's mind and then get the right knowledge. And why cannot this be explained? Because it is the source of all the speech. It is because of this knowledge that I am able to speak, because of the consciousness. So that is why it cannot be described in words. It cannot be seen. They say, can God be seen? No. Why? Because he is the cause of my eyes seeing. My eyes are seeing because of him. So how can I see that because of which I am seeing? How can I hear that because of which I am hearing? It is like the flashlight. You know, we always give the example that there is a flashlight. Now there is a battery in there, ever ready, two batteries, you know. size C. Now the room is dark, and so you put on the flashlight and the bulb gets lit. And the bulb, with the bulb, you can see the whole room. Even though the room is dark, with the bulb, you can see the room. But then somebody says, how do you know there is a flat battery? Or I want to see whether the battery is ever ready or Duracell. So they say, okay, let's take out the battery and try to see the battery. So the room is dark, so you open the back and pull out the battery. And now you put it in front of the bulb and say, let me see the battery with this bulb. And you cannot. Because the battery is the one illumining the bulb, so the bulb can no longer see that battery. So the consciousness within me, because of which my eyes can see, my ears can hear, my nose can smell, my tongue can taste, my skin can touch. So that consciousness cannot be seen, heard, smelled, tasted, touched, experienced. So that is the beauty of this knowledge, that the knowledge can only be conveyed through a higher, it's called intuition. You know, they describe this as intuition, as a higher understanding. Yeah, the words are necessary. You need the scriptures, you need a book, you need a teacher to tell you. But then ultimately, the student, if he or she only listens to the knowledge, closes the book and says, okay, done, I have understood Dakshinamurti, then your knowledge is incomplete. Because the knowledge can only become my knowledge when whatever I have heard, I go home and reread the book, I think about it, I say, is that really true or not? Even though it is said in this book, but is it really true? Does that really apply to me? Is it something that is relevant? And when that knowledge becomes my own knowledge, that I have understood it, and then I apply that in my life, then the knowledge is said to be my knowledge. The example they give is, you know, like cooking. You know, you may read the cookbooks. You have read the book. You know how to make pizza. You know how to make pasta. You know how to make Chinese food. But the knowledge is only in the cookbook. And you have understood it. You have read it. Okay, you have memorized. I'm going to put this much of that, this much of that, and make it. But then unless you actually sit down and make that pasta or make that dish, and then that becomes the second part. I first understood it, next I have applied it and made it. And then when I eat that dish and it becomes part of me, then my experience is complete. Yes, this is how you make the pasta, this is how it comes out, and this is how it is, how it tastes. So that's why in our scriptural studies, they say there are three steps: Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. Shravana means listening. Listening and reading the books is the first step. The second step is to go home and think about it. And then the third step is to apply that in your life. So when you do that, all of them together, then only the knowledge becomes complete. And until then, your doubts cannot be dispelled. Doubts can only be dispelled when you have yourself experienced this highest truth. So that is the beauty of this text, that it gives us the highest knowledge. It is a knowledge conveyed by the Lord Himself. And it is the knowledge of me, myself. This knowledge is not of something outside. It does not talk about space or air, or does not talk about factories or job or business or money or power. It talks about who I am, what is my true nature, who am I? I am that consciousness, I am that reality, and how this knowing this can make me a better person and make me realize the highest truth. So that is the two verses that we have done today.